Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Time for Tell Me Why with Graham Finlay. If you have a question for Graham, you can send it in to afternoon@newstalk.com. We did get an email in during the week from Andy and Sarah in Cavan. The question Andy says was posed by his 9-year-old daughter, Sarah. She got her first wage packet for jobs around the house, €5 in an envelope with her name on it, as she had requested. Then the question, why are they called wages? I can find the definition, but not the origin. So Graham Finlay is here to tell us.
Yeah,
good afternoon, Graham.
I like this chat a lot. She's like, and in small unmarked bills, you know. I just imagine some kind of mafia style handover here. But it's great because it shows that she realizes this is a transaction, and it's also some sense of the value of money and sort of formalizing this whole relationship. And admittedly, this is a bit of a weird thing. I mean, I want to talk about all sorts of how we got to the point where some of us and some of us not paying our children wages for household chores. Mm. Anyway, she's quite right to call it wages as opposed to a salary, she would get no matter how many chores she did or not.
Yes,
it's a
okay.
Monthly or annual thing. Whereas wages are regular payment for a particular piece of work, or now in our contemporary society, for sort of a time spent doing work, whether it's a day's wages or an hour's wages. Mm. And the actual etymological origin of this, we could occupy us forever because it's incredibly complicated. And I have to say, I could happily spend the entire day playing around with the Oxford English Dictionary, the long one, you know, the one with all the origins and all the earliest uses and stuff like that. But it seems to begin in Old Germanic as wed, which becomes the Old English wed, which has two D's on it, for those of you who aren't able to read over my shoulder. and that stands for a pledge or security, which, of course, is related to things like wedding, you know, getting to wed someone and so forth. It's any kind of pledge or security which you would give someone. And these are quite ancient uses. So another old German variant was wajo, and an old friend, waij. But in old Romance languages, it started with a G, as gage or guage. And you can see how we're getting closer to a sort of w-age kind of sound here. And it shows up in Anglo-Latin, wagium, which is where we get the word wage and wages. And so you can see how things are pinballing around between old Germanic to old English to old French, into the sort of peculiar form of Latin spoken in the sort of Middle Ages in England, and then turned into like a modern English word by being turned into wage and wages. Now, what's really interesting is how this develops. Now, initially, it's only kind of a pledge or a security, and it can be incredibly wide in its application. One of which is you can pledge yourself to combat. You can pledge yourself to resolve your differences through judicial combat, which is quite popular in the Middle Ages and especially in the pre-Norman England. But you can also, so by extension, you then pledge yourself to a combat in terms of waging war, right? Or
okay.
Waging battle.
Right? Yeah.
And that's where that's coming from. Mm. And so it goes from this general notion of pledging a security or giving someone something or pledging that you pay someone something to the idea of the monetary compensation you give initially to very high status people. Most of the references in the Oxford English Dictionary are to pages. Pages get their wages, as it were, and to professionals. But then over the sort of long period, and it first starts in the 15th century where it's equated to hire of a laborer. And hire is actually an impeccably old English word, but it's pretty much unchanged since the pre-10th century. Anyway, it over the course of the 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th century becomes associated with paying a laborer their wages for a day's work or an hour's work. And again, people have pointed out that this is a big, long conversion process. You go from a world in which many, many people don't receive wages per se. You know, they're serfs or slaves or indentured servants or sharecroppers. And who are just working away on the land and are transferring money up and as up goods often up, or craftspeople who you're buying the actual finished piece of work, not, you know, for its value as a piece of work, and not, you know, for the time the craftsman or craftswoman rather seldom spent on it, to a point where you can measure everyone's labor in time. And that involves clocks and calendars and a whole bunch of regimentation, which might have been missing from feudal times.
Right. Okay. And so that's, I suppose that's the interesting thing about Sarah being paid, or and children in general being paid about for chores, that it's there's an implicit lesson there that labor has a value.
Labor has a value. I mean, before I sort of downgrade chores and eventually ask Sarah whether she feels like she's being paid enough. Yeah. It's actually not Sarah. I think quite properly the child is nameless in this question.
Okay,
I mean, unless it's Sarah is the child. We don't know.
Yeah.
But I feel like David Carey now.
Yeah, yeah. I was assuming Sarah was the child.
But in any case, eventually I'm going to ask the child whether they feel like they're being paid enough. And many, many children, I had an informal poll of a whole bunch of primary school children, because I talked to a lot of primary school children the other day, and most of them do chores, but not all of them get paid. So there are all these debates surrounding that. But there do seem to be tremendous amounts of benefits to actually having your children do chores, in that they want to do them for the most part. They feel good about contributing to family life. They become better at planning. There are many, many skills which are developed, and in fact people have even claimed on the basis of research that they will be greater successes in life. So there's a lot hanging on this,
yeah.
It turns out. But you know, one of the things about chores, and in fact chores as a word comes from the Old English comes from the sort of Middle English chair, or even more recent, which comes from the Old English chair, which is any kind of action or task, right? But it increasingly becomes associated with domestic tasks, and hence we get words like charwoman, right? So again, chores have sort of evolved from just any kind of labor and any kind of actions to this highly specific domestic sense of actions. Although Henry ruined it by talking to a guy who views going and getting newspapers or whatever he was doing as a chore in the Vox Pop. But he's an outlier. He's going back to the Middle Ages and a thousand years ago. Anyway, so what is quite striking is that, you know, this necessary labor has always been around. I mean, if you work on a farm, you know, there's an awful lot of chores, and we talk about farming chores, you know, to be done, or even just maintaining the household. And of course, for most of history, and including the 19th century, where this whole children and chores thing tends to develop quite rapidly, you know, the actual household labor has been incredibly extensive. So if you're in the middle and upper middle classes, and this varies, I think, considerably between the United States and Britain, say, you might do chores for sort of the kind of reasons we usually are doing them now. Although I think there's a bit of the other thing I'm going to talk about as well, you know, where it's good for children, it teaches them certain kinds of virtues of self-reliance. This is especially true of the American situation. And, you know, allows them to manage their money and get the idea of working and sort of solidarity and things like that. But in the upper classes, especially in the 19th century, it often took the sort of form of play. Right. And so they give, and especially for girls, there's a really gendered quality to chores. Boys in sort of late 19th century Britain and in the United States to some extent were sort of allowed to run free, whereas girls were sort of expected to be sort of future heads of household, and they would be given dolls, but they also might be given sort of brooms or toy tea sets and things like that. And girls were made to do much more useful chores than boys, right? And far more chores as well in the 19th century. This still seems to be true. And in fact,
why does this not surprise
in the UK, right, the gender pay gap appears quite early on. Now, I can't speak for Ireland, but in the UK, girls do more chores and are paid less for them than boys. So your daughter might start to resent the payment gap.
But if she starts scrawling Me Too on the walls, right.
But
you'll
of course,
know what that means.
Working class children would have to work, right?
Yeah.
And often that took, you know, they'd have to go out and either work in the home, right, just to bring income, or go out and work in factories. But often the form their work took was sort of domestic chores for other people. So they do sort of little one-off jobs, but not for their family, but, you know, to bring income into the house. And they were not keeping it in terms of pocket money, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
but that's probably because the mother, in many cases, couldn't go out to work, because the amount of time it took to keep a house clean and to cook food for people was extraordinary. And one of the saddest sort of facts of the late 19th century and early 20th century, and we can decide whether it's true now, is that the actual number of hours working in the household did not go down despite the arrival of lots and lots of labor-saving devices. Because the expectations in terms of cleanliness went up during the same period. So chores are really, really fraught.
It's a pejorative term now. In this part of the world, I've seen something is described as a chore. It's not a pleasant task.
I suppose you mean we're teaching people a lot about the world of work, and some of it, I mean, you know, there are all these different economic models about what work is about. I mean, so again, we're going to go full on Marxist with this poor Kevin child.
Yeah.
You know, she can join us for the revolution later. But, you know, Marxists would say that, you know, working and laboring is what we are. That's what we do. And there's no reason why it has to be viewed as a chore. It has to be, it's being our human essence to labor. We should enjoy it. We should, you know, enjoy doing, sweeping the house as much as we enjoy composing poetry or, you know, talking stuff on the radio. But at the same time, you know, most classical economists talk about how labor is bad, right? And we try to avoid it. And so it's a sort of pain we undergo for the sake of some greater gain. And according, some economists have actually studied chores, and there's sort of what they call spillover effects. So if you pay, and this comes down to the pay factor, if you pay your teenager to make their bed, right, or something else, right, they may neglect all the other things they used to do for free,
yeah,
right, in favor of the one they're getting paid for. And that's a spillover effect, as they say in economics, and is a suboptimal result. So, yeah, the whole... And one of the things which is really interesting...
I must remember to say that.
You've got to work on that. One of the things... And actually, they think this is coming into our lives sooner than people think. They think it's probably the optimum time to get them started on labor exploitation and chores is about 3. Right.
Yeah.
So you have that to look forward to in some cases. But, you know, one of the things which is really striking about this, it is in the domestic situation, and it's also all, and so people are laboring often alongside, as I'm sure Andy and Sarah in Kavanaugh, their domestics or their chore doers in the same domestic situation. And in that, you get really complex questions of sort of control. And much of this question of paying for chores, getting children to do chores, really ultimately is about control, right? And shaping the child and their desires to, you know, to spend money in particular ways. And accordingly, people are actually getting away from giving their kids money for chores in favor of giving them money for a particular purpose. And some people think that this is related, this is in the UK again, related to our sort of increasingly controlling attitudes as parents, where we want to make choices for every aspect of our children's lives.
Is that necessarily working or not? Somebody texts in to suggest the word salary comes from salt.
It does. And that's one of the funny things. So in Old French, wages is gage, but the current translation, and I looked this up, is salaire. And that comes from salt, from salarium. And many of our words for salary have to do with the commodities which were first, and wages, well, not salary especially, first given to, say, soldiers, which may be related to salt and may be related to solidus, which is gold. But yes, salt was an incredibly expensive and controlled commodity and a very important one. And so in Latin, salt was the basis of the word salarium, which became salaire in French and salary.
Yeah. Now, somebody else has texted in about the phrase wages of sin, which is, I think, from the New Testament. Obviously, that would be a translation of that. Would the word wages have existed in the sense we mean it when it was originally used?
Well, that is it's a really important transitional sort of reference. So I think the wages of sin is death.
Yeah.
Comes from the King James version of the Bible, which has had a profound influence on how we talk. And in many ways, whether Shakespeare was involved or not, like Shakespeare, contributed a whole lot of new word usages. And it is I read it as a sort of halfway house. I mean, you could read it either as a good early example of the idea that it's some kind of wage. It's the repayment you get if you sin. But it could also be just this sense of what you receive in terms of a pledge generally, right?
Yeah.
In terms of the wages. So yeah, it's not clear. And I actually meant to do this, and this shows you the limits of my ability to remember to do stuff. I meant to look this up and see what the sort of initial Greek word was in the New Testament, and maybe I'll find that out and tweet it out later to make up for my dreadful lack of biblical scholarship on this matter.
No doubt texting it in as we speak. But to go back to your kind of Marxist analysis of this, if little boys and girls are paid paid for chores, according to a Marxist analysis, is it then just inevitable that they, you know, band together and overthrow their bourgeois parents?
Well, one would hope so.
Yeah.
One of my questions for this girl in Kavan is, does she think she's being paid enough? Right. So Marx said wage labor under capitalism, which is the form all this sort of exploitation takes. I mean, exploitation under serfdom involves feeding property and goods up to the Lord and stuff like that. Under capitalism, you know, the wage laborer receives his or her subsistence, presumably like your child in Kavan, right? But that's less than the full value of the child's labor. So the remaining part, the capitalist takes for themselves, it's surplus value in the Marxist terms, and uses it as capital to either buy more means of production or to just have as capital and so forth. You know, so one way to look at this, and this is essential to the capitalist being a capitalist and the wage laborer being the wage laborer, right? They reinforce each other, and that's how capitalism works and increases its productive forces. You don't need to know this if you're nine. What you do need to know is that your parents could probably have to would probably have to pay someone 12 or 13 euro to clean the house if you didn't do it for them, right?
Here's an active example of this. I pay my 15-year-old son 10 euro a week for chores. I pay my 11-year-old daughter 5 euros. She does the laundry and hoovers every week. My son mows the lawn or cleans up dishes, etc. The work in my eyes is equal, but I feel due to their age, they have different needs for their money. Hence why my son gets more. Am I wrong for doing this?
Well, I'll tell you what Marx says. Your 11-year-old daughter, I believe, should get together with the 9-year-old daughter and Kevin.
Yeah.
Overthrow their petty bourgeois parents. And actually, the petty bourgeoisie in Marx are people who work generally with their family with some means of production, but not the kind of big ones which the capitalist has, right? Overthrow your petty bourgeois parents, seize the means of production, and get the full value of your labor. Sadly, the means of production in this case are the Hoover, the dishwasher, and the washing machine.
you might be a little
disappointed.
Trouble's coming your way, folks. Graham, thanks for being really fascinating as always. Graham Finley, there we go.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.